We'll begin. So this is a talk about something that you're already doing, that you're already excelling in, and so it's kind of like just a reminder or maybe just to draw out a little bit more and let you know that this is a really, really great thing that you're doing. So it's a talk about generosity. And we talked a little bit in the opening about how community is based on sila, these well-meaning actions, these actions for the well-being of all. And so generosity is one aspect within sila. And it also joins sila in a list of things, which, so this isn't a word you should know, it's called a parami. So this is a Sanskrit word. So the Buddha was from this Indian place that had these ancient languages, and it's a word that often gets translated as a perfection. But if we actually kind of look a little bit at the etymology, which is the kind of how words form, how words evolve into use, parami is both meaning. I have notes. Sorry. Probably best to keep to them. So the param is the kind of the further shore. So when we're sitting on that lake and we see the further shore, like the destination of our spiritual path. In Buddhism, they often refer to the further shore. And the practices are those ways in which to cross to the further shore. And the parama is kind of the highest, the utmost, the kind of, when we set ourselves a goal and ambition, that's our kind of highest thing. So what really moves us to be a purpose for our life, right? In the way that, you know, getting a good job or getting a lot of money or even getting into a fun and loving relationship, there's something even higher that can draw us on sometimes. So we could say it's like the lighthouse or the north star, you know, the navigational star for our heart and mind, which is referred to as the citta, the heart-mind experience of life. And when it's guided in this way, it's called the bodhicitta. It's the body like Buddha, awakening, awake. And so just to kind of briefly mention these six paramis is generosity or helpfulness. The second is discipline, or what we've referred to as sila, the ethics of the way we live. The third is the patience, being patient. So when we're on the path, we can see how all of these kind of really come in very useful. The fourth is a wholeheartedness or a diligence or a resolve to kind of meet the experience. Maybe quite hard words to translate. Like when you do something wholeheartedly, fully.
But that's more open-hearted than...
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like fully involved, fully dedicated. Anyway, it's just a kind of a working thing. The fifth is meditation, concentration, single-mindedness, one coming to a state of oneness. And the sixth is this kind of incisive knowledge, wisdom, clarity of mind. And I think they all sound really quite interesting, quite thrilling, kind of, I think they're beautiful qualities in human life. And we may feel more drawn to one or the other, or it may have just kind of shot by as a really list of lofty and complicated ideas.
Discipline. How do you understand discipline?
Mm-hmm.
Like, could you say something more about that? Because I don't know, like, that can be quite tricky. Like, I don't fully understand, like, what you mean by discipline.
Okay.
Like, being strict for myself. Like,
yeah, no. So not being strict for yourself.
Not being
strict on yourself, no. It's to have a discipline, to kind of have that discipline of keep coming back, but also in this framework to also understand what is a wholesome way of leading your life and what is an unwholesome way of leading your life. So really coming from that clarity, not from just a set of rules.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some, like, devotion in a way.
A devotion is certainly a part of the path, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what we can see within this list of the paramis, which kind of gives us something quite broad, is that we often look at meditation as being kind of the core element in the spiritual path. And that would be a limitation of the path. Just as we see that physical yoga is just one part of the eight limbs of yoga, which are very expansive kind of path. Again, you know, mentioning something at the beginning, this is quite broad and we're going to kind of focus down. So don't get too, don't worry too much about that. But as I think maybe Zohar mentioned in the opening talk, is that the Buddha would always begin his teachings talking about generosity, talking about this kind of helpfulness quality, which we mentioned as the first of these paramis. And I think that we can kind of sense that generosity is a really worthy quality to generate in our lives. And it's lovely to receive and it's lovely to give. But this doesn't limit it just from being like something to kind of open with. When asked, the Buddha would say that he would open with it because it actually creates more space in the heart, calms people down, makes them feel quite relaxed, and then they can be more receptive to other teachings. But it's not just a starting point. And if we go into it, I think we can see that generosity is a path that runs really deep, really wide, and is really strong in our practice. So other kind of synonyms, other ways of saying generosity is this kind of open-handedness. We can approach life in an open-handed way. It's the quality of kindness, it's acts of kindness. It's this kind of big-heartedness that we can feel at times. So these are both kind of fruits of generosity and they're acts of generosity. They're what allow us to act from generosity, to feel into the kind of bounteousness, that things are bountiful, that there's plentiful, there's enough, more than enough. And also those other ideals which we can sometimes have for ourselves of not being selfish, of acting for others, what we refer to as altruism. So all of that kind of comes within the field of generosity. And I think it could be really helpful to actually also inquire into what do we feel are our strengths or our weaknesses in terms of how we are generous. So we might notice that it's more easy for us to give our time, you know, dedicate our time to something, than to give away things that we've kind of taken hold of, become my things. So just kind of noticing what's my strengths, what are my weaknesses, and, you know, really appreciate what we're good at giving away. But also be interested in kind of extending the edge or the limitations or into new areas as well. You know, if we're good at being generous with our words or if we're generous more with our deeds. Seeing what's also an easy direction for us to be generous. You know, if it's towards certain people, or are we able to also be generous to ourselves? Are we able to be generous to the world, to anonymous? Are we able to give out in those ways? So just to say a few kind of obvious things, like what actually makes an action a generous action. So it's obviously it's in the intention that we have towards the action. And it's also in the attitude of how we give. So in terms of the intention, it's not that generous a thing to do, to kind of give away a lot of money, even if we don't have a lot of money, if it's for a bad cause, you know, if it's for something that's going to cause difficulty in the world. And likewise, of course, it's not that generous to give away a small amount of money when we have a lot of money, where it is obviously a very generous thing to give away a lot of our money when we don't have that much. So it's not the action itself, but really the intent and the attitude behind it, which really sums up that feeling of generosity, and then actually makes it useful, right? Because what we actually are looking for is a stretch away from this kind of self-concern. Like, we can live with kind of self-concern orbiting around, what can I get out of this situation? You know, can sometimes be what's happening, and that's kind of stretching that just a little bit. Generosity stretching us. Obviously, it's not always a thing that we give, and there can be both the generosity of not doing something, you know, of holding back from showing how angry I am. You know, it can be quite a generous thing as I wait for that to kind of cool, or not taking an unfair amount of the food can be a generous act both to the other people around and also to myself. You know, overfilling with food isn't a good thing for me. And of course, it can also be the quality of listening. Like, what a generous thing that is to give someone your wholehearted attention. It can be creating space for people, being of support, being kind. So these are actually really priceless things. Like, you couldn't trade these qualities. That they're so invaluable in the world. But also to say that generosity also doesn't need to be noteworthy. And something that's really interesting about it is it also doesn't need to be seen. And it doesn't even need to be recognized by the person who's doing it. Right? So if we can have examples about that, can we actually be generous without thinking about it? Is it an important quality of generosity that we know that we're doing it? So say, like, a mother is feeding their baby. Is that an act of generosity? Like, maybe from the baby's perspective, if we take their side, yeah, it's a really generous thing because that's what's going to allow it to grow and everything. But is it a generous thing from the mother? It's like an automatic thing, or is it generous? I don't know. You know. If there's a few kids outside playing and they're sharing and they're having fun and they're all playing together and they're all benefiting, there's kind of an increase in happiness. Is it generous of them to be playful? It is. You could say it is. But in that other way, it's kind of natural. Like, when you come in and you participate in the meditation and you try and stay still and non-disturbing to the people around you, it actually generates a very nice meditation for yourself and creates a really lovely atmosphere for everyone else. But we may not think of it as being particularly generous. So there are really many ways we actually help each other here, in which we're generous here, how we give the space to each other, these times when we share our wisdom, our experience, and that can kind of really help each other, like in the discussion groups or over a conversation. There can be those opportunities which we take or don't take of, like, starting a conversation with someone else that we haven't talked to already at the table. You know, kind of taking that risk of starting something, of just putting something out there that might lead to something or not. Or that generosity of making a conversation kind of a deep conversation, a meaningful conversation, as we kind of turn the topic to something that's, you know, could be really beneficial. But just to say that there is a thread here from this question about how important it is to be seen. And if I say that there is a great importance in not needing to be seen, not needing to be recognized as generous, that actually leads from these simple actions to a really very, very deep sense of how powerful generosity can be in our practice. So just kind of keeping open to that as you listen to the talk. And I hopefully I'll come back to it and kind of tie up that thread if it's not yet clear. So I kind of mentioned it already, but of course things don't bring you happiness. This is the good anti-capitalism speech of Dharma. But it's something that we know, right? Happiness does not come from getting things. It certainly doesn't last very long in terms of getting things. It can come a reasonable amount from giving away things. There can be that lightness and spaciousness and happiness of seeing the other person. And of course, we really know it doesn't come when we get things and we can really sense that we're depriving others of it. And that really, really takes the edge off the experience of receiving. And I had this experience, I think Zaya did a short metta meditation in the activity today. Yeah. So in metta meditation, for those who didn't make it there or haven't experienced it before, is we're kind of wishing well for another person, wishing them, may you be happy, something like this. It may have been a different thing today. But I was doing that kind of practice, calling people to mind, just random people from my life, like, oh, may you be happy. Oh, I can't quite imagine that person happy. It was like useful for me to kind of see that person feeling that kind of happiness. It was quite a visual practice for me. So I was imagining them getting things, and it was like, I'm sure I've seen them getting things. I still can't see them happy. And it made me realize, like, when you see people happy, it's usually in the giving. When they're giving things, then that happiness, it feels really genuine. You feel the increase of space. And so that really helped me to kind of bear witness to that, but it also made me realize, that's where happiness lies in our lives. It's in that moment where we're giving it away. So the kind of tip is that when we see that we value something, could we also consider sharing it and maybe even giving it away? You know, those things that we really value. If we want to increase happiness in ourselves and in the world, I think that that's something we have to at least consider. And something I've tried to consider for myself is that if I notice myself really wanting something, really obsessing over it, at least kind of making the commitment that if I'm going to have this thing, I'm also going to give one away. Like, if it's really getting me that much, then I'm going to think about it and think about it. Maybe that's really worthwhile. And, you know, if we can't actually participate in, you know, maybe we don't have the resources to be able to buy an equivalent gift, then it really draws us towards this other quality, is maybe we can actually make do with less. So if we're saying that happiness doesn't come from getting and it comes from giving, what about not getting? How does that make me feel? If it's for my own choice, for my own option. I'm sure there must be a really, really beautiful word for this kind of living simply, and but the only ones that are coming to me don't give that feeling.
Renunciation.
Yeah, so renunciation doesn't always hit people as feeling very happy. And living, you know, austere and simple, and there's another word, frugal, which aren't words you hear so much because we live in such a positive capitalist society. But we can actually think of frugality, which is living with less, as a gift both to yourself and to the world. That is actually the way it works, I think. You know, we know this reality, probably we've come in touch with this fact, that if everybody lives to a modern Western standard, we would need more resources than we have on this planet. I'm not sure how many planets it is. It's something 1.5 or... Anyway, it's more planets than we have, which is what's really important, because we have only got one planet. There isn't, like, the 0.5 planet that we can pull up alongside to at some later stage. Which really means that frugality is not just important for us and the world. It's actually... I mean, it isn't just important for us and the happiness of the world. It's actually a reality. Like, we have to look at how we're living. So Buddhist monks are actually encouraged daily to reflect on called the four requisites, but we know as maybe the kind of the base standards of living, that you have food, clothing, shelter, and medicine. And they have to kind of contemplate how they're receiving these things, and just to kind of check in if they're having an excess of it, right? So their kind of goal, this word that Zha used in her talk yesterday, bhikkhu, also means kind of beggar. Like they went forth from their homes and their livelihoods to live as beggars, to live really simply, really frugally. And so you just look at these four requisites, and how am I receiving these? And how am I using them in my life? Like, am I just fulfilling my basic needs, or am I using them to develop unskillful states of mind? And this reflection also needs to include, like, how did I come by these things? So when we have our possessions, how did we come by them? How were they created? How did we afford to have them? You know, there's that really great little video, I don't know if people saw it, of I think it's like a €1 t-shirt dispensing machine. And people go up and they go to a €2 or €5 t-shirt dispensing machine. And then when you press the button that you want to buy it, it shows you how a €5 t-shirt is made. You see, you know, the conditions that it was made in and everything like this. And at the end it says, do you still want your t-shirt? You know, or do you want to give this €5 to support, you know, a more fair, equal contribution to charity and things like this? And most people obviously push that button saying, no. Seriously. Let's give, let's support, and people want to do that. People want to be moved in that way. So this reflection that the monks undertake is with the goal to encourage them to live simply, to also understand their interconnection with all beings, and actually to try and uncover a truly noble form of happiness in their lives. A form of happiness, a nature of happiness that is not causing or burdening other beings. Right? So a happiness which isn't a burden for other beings to have to carry. Which is really talking about that inner wellspring of bliss, of joy, of contentment that we can come to from living simply, from meeting directly our lives. And so it's also really important to say that this kind of living simply, it shouldn't be causing hurt to ourselves as well, right? We're also included within this burden that all beings might have to carry for this kind of happiness. But it does call for a real distinction between what are our needs and what are our greeds. Between what's causing more and more self-concern, and therefore separation from others, which is a cause for unhappiness in modern humans, as we know, and what's actually an action which is leading to a wider field of care and a deeper sense of community. Like I think, you know, like we know from this kind of experience, more and more people have mentioned that feeling of community, that feeling of doing this together, and we are doing this together, so that's really natural to feel it. So what becomes a really kind of day-to-day question is like, well, what's actually generous to myself? What's going to be a generous way of living? I think like many of us, when we feel sad, we feel down, we feel, you know, that life is difficult, we turn towards habitual things that we do. You know, like we eat junk food, maybe we grab a book or try and watch some TV, get distracted away from this kind of thing. And many people come to meditation because it offers an alternative to that, because, you know, that generally doesn't really work. Like, a distraction is a temporary thing at best. Eating junk food usually makes you feel pretty bad after a while. And just taking our minds away from the situation doesn't tend to change the situation when we have to come back and meet it again. So, you know, alternatives, having a meditation or taking a walk, spending time in nature, they're really good. They clear the air, they create some beneficial space. But the thing that Dharma teachings, but also science and scientific studies are showing, is that the most beneficial thing of doing when you're feeling in that kind of state of feeling really down or really isolated is actually to do something for someone else. And it's kind of the opposite of the intuition might be, because you kind of feel like you don't have much to give, you don't have anything to give. But the typical thing was, as soon as somebody could suggest to someone to do something like that, it almost always led to a more positive state of mind.
But it's not all like a way to also escape, like just to be around people. Like, I want to help them, I want to spend time with people, so in a way that I don't think about, you know, my own problems.
Yes, so exactly. So very much as we were saying in the beginning, the intention and the attitude are really, really important.
It's inside why I want to do that.
Right.
I want to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it in all our actions in life, it's really, really important to know about that. So something we can kind of humorously recognize is that in life, a person or a being who is entirely wrapped up in self-concern, which sadly seems to be somewhere in our evolution to kind of live this way a little bit, is wrapped up in this sense of I, me and mine, and what I can get out of life, what's in this for me, makes us a real pain in the ass for the world and kind of a pain in the ass for ourselves as well. So when we have any moment, can we kind of honestly ask that, would I have really preferred to have shared this moment, this thing, or had it all to myself? If we can just honestly ask that in any kind of moment where we feel this kind of generosity come up, like your taste buds are just screaming out to have that piece of cake or whatever it is, but like, you know, could I have shared this moment? And Stephen Levine, who's a great meditation teacher, passed away this year, but was really involved in the hospice movement and working a lot with people who were dying or had terminal diagnoses, that in his experience of this kind of approaching death, or people who had a near-death experience and how they looked back on their life, they saw that what became the only real value as they reflected back through this series of events, was like the only way to measure its worthwhileness was to see if it included love, if it included goodness, if it included this quality of generosity. And anything else that just served the self, the single self, the egoic self, just seemed like a massive wasted opportunity, a really big missed opportunity. And something we know is that in our life, one time, at some point, we are going to die. We are going to have to give up this life, this collection of experiences, and also this collection of things. So it seems really worthwhile in knowing that eventually someone else will inherit these things. We could actually be around and present for the experience of giving those away. So that kind of move towards frugality is also saying, well, why not participate in the joy of sharing your belongings? And of course, for some of us, that's, well, too much. But for some of us, there might be just that slight shift of like imagining, yeah, you know, everything that isn't absolutely necessary, if I gave that away, what would happen? So there's a quote from Ashin Tijaniya, who's been to Finland and taught with in the Naroda community. He says, in life, you should learn to not expect anything in return for whatever you do for others. In life, you should learn to not expect anything in return for whatever you do for others. With the work of awareness, too, you should learn not to expect any results or good experiences. So we're going to start looking at how generosity impacts on the spiritual life directly. And it is pretty profound, I believe. So we can start to ask, what could actually be important, what could actually be essential about getting good at giving for our spiritual path? And just kind of holding that as this open question. So I was speaking about these open questions. So what would it mean if we didn't hold on to anything, if we're willing to give away anything? What would it mean if we were actually willing to give up even the most beautiful qualities that we feel attached to, right? Who we feel, this is who I am. Could we also be willing to give that up? Could we even give up the sense of becoming a better person, you know, or being a great person, so that we're actually letting this kind of generosity open up like a flow through us? And it feels, in a way, that there's something really kind of beautiful about being so open, so natural, unplanned, perhaps naked in the face of others. There could be this kind of a lack of inhibition or restraint, that we're just letting things come in and through. And it kind of implies that we need to trust in the deep sense of our goodness, which is really asking a lot for many of us, to really kind of trust that it's actually goodness in there that wants to come through, right? You don't have to keep controlling it and guiding it and worrying about that darn ego that's going to, you know, turn everything to its own advantage. And really trust that the heart can lead in these kind of examples and will free us from regret. If I really... seeing if we can find the ability to trust into that. Of course, it will lead us to a certain fear will arrive, you know, maybe I won't be good enough, or maybe I won't get back enough if I live in this way. And, you know, maybe you should plan ahead, maybe you should save for the future, maybe you should do all these things. Because it is a risk. But there's something in that risk also. You know, it's kind of a, if taken wisely with eyes open, we can take certain risks and only do as much as you feel is in your capacity to do, right? But that's actually why it is generous and worthwhile, right? There has to be that kind of risk, because it is expanding that self-concern, right? If it was just safe, it would be supporting self-concern. But really finding that balance, for only doing as much as you feel able to do, and knowing over time that could change, that could grow. Because there's a really interesting relationship between the self and giving. And usually it works in like two sides of a seesaw balancing. Self is up, giving is down, giving is up, self is down, right? That kind of balancing situation. So our generosity is often limited by how much attachment to self-view there is, how much attachment to self-importance there is. You know, a feeling of not having enough or not being good enough limits the ability to give, right? And those two ideas are actually types of self-view, right? Self-view is not always I'm great, it's also I'm bad. Those are kind of self-views. Lack of flexibility in that. Yet, you know, how do we feel when we give? And then when we give, we're being generous, it actually reduces our attachment to self-view. So the actual action of giving something away frees up a greater space, and the self doesn't take up so much of that space. So there's a more spacious feeling. Self-view is less. So what that means is that the emptiness of self, right? The self is a fabrication brought together Well, we had trouble with fabrication before. Well, let's just deal with self-concern and forget emptiness of self for this time being. It's not essential in this. So, self becomes less important when we're able to give. And our good friend and very wise teacher, Rob Bebea, likes to talk about this, how things work in both ways. So we could either focus on bringing the self into more space, into a more healthy kind of relationship, and therefore it will free up the heart to be more generous. Or we could do more generous actions, and that would free up the heart because of the way generosity affects us, right? So whatever you want to kind of focus on, it keeps working, which also means that it starts to make a reciprocal kind of cycle. More self, less generosity. Less generosity, there's more self. More generosity, there's less self. The less self there is, the more generosity, the more there's a flow. Which is also the same with a sense of abundance. So the more we give, the more abundance we feel that we actually have, because there's more to us, more, we are more, we become greater. And also a sense of fear. As the sense of self lessens, there's also a lessening in the sense of fear and worry. And so this kind of generosity and abundance, increasing, self, fear, decreasing. So generosity lessens fear, which means it brings greater happiness. So if you ever feel like you don't have enough, you can actually give and see that perception change. Just bear witness to that transformation of perception, because it's a perception. Perceptions are not fixed, right? We can perceive something or not. So in the light of that, we can ask, how much do we actually have to give? What opportunities are we not regarding? Because how much do we actually have to give? And I think we really don't know. We can actually never really know how much we have to give. But it's probably often just a little bit more than we think. Just a little bit more. And so we can try giving that much. A little bit more than we might feel really comfortable in doing. And when we give, we may discover or uncover new qualities that we didn't know we had. And now these are things we can give. Right? In the way that we're explaining it about this sense of abundance. So just as when we go into a very cluttered, full room, if this room was full of things, we start giving away some of the things. We'll start to see things in this room that we didn't even know were in here. And might be good things that we can give away and see, there's people who need this. We move it out and move it out until we end up with just a beautiful space where we can meditate, because we've given away the unnecessary things. And we may not just be talking about things, we may be talking about qualities which I can give to the world. And it may eventually be everything or all things. You can really kind of open up the floodgates of the heart, really let life in and through, untie all the knots, be carefree, go wild, and just seeing how giving can actually free us from a sense of lack. So there can sometimes be this sense of lack running through our lives. Something's missing. Something's not here. And in giving, we actually might find that that thing that we thought was a thing we had to get was actually more a way we needed to live. Generosity can free us from that sense of needing to hold back, from hesitating, from really getting involved. So we'll just close with a quote from the Tao Te Ching. If you want to become full, let yourself be empty. If you want to be reborn, let yourself die. If you want to be given everything, give everything up. So we just have a few quiet minutes in the hall, and then we'll leave the hall in silence up till dinner time, for those who wish. May all beings everywhere live with a heart as wide as the world.